Welcome to The Culture's Money. The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
Welcome back, culture members. This is episode 10 of The Culture's Money. As usual, I am your host, Jamal Vitos. Others of you may know me on other social media platforms as Leo Grand Prince. But however it is that you know me, I hope you know me to be an advocate for Black wealth, financial literacy, and generational wealth creation. I am super excited and dope about this episode because I have my first young Black entrepreneur and young man on the show today. The ladies have been holding it down the last 4 or 5 episodes. But I finally have a gentleman on here to kind of add in some mix and some different dynamics to the show. So I would like to introduce you guys a good friend from Twitter, Mr. AJ.
How you guys doing?
All right. AJ, tell them a little bit about yourself before we get started.
All right. So my name's AJ Frazier. I'm originally from Louisiana. Currently, I'm a financial analyst and also I own several businesses.
All right, cool. AJ and I are not going to tell you that we tried to record this episode yesterday, but we had some technical problems. So this is take two, and we're hoping to give you guys a good episode. Start off, like, I don't know if this happens to you a lot. Tell people exactly what a financial analyst is, because I find sometimes that I have, like, Twitter and Instagram and Facebook friends, because I talk about finance and financial budgeting and management so much. I think they always think that we're like accountants and all that. And though we may know some accounting and everything, just give people a little, you know, dive into it, helping me explain to them what a financial analyst is.
So it's funny because like a lot of people mix financial analysts up with people that does taxes or bookkeeping, which don't get me wrong, I love both of those. I'm pretty good at doing taxes. I love doing the bookkeeping. But also with finance, it's the overview of the financial aspect of a business. So it's more of a deeper dive than versus your bookkeeping aspect. So it's the overview of it. So it's your budget, it's your actuals, it's your forecast, it's how is your company really doing, you know, just kind of going over the story of the company. And one thing what I tell people, you know, as a financial analyst, numbers tell a story. And those numbers are going to tell a good story or it's going to tell a bad story. So currently what I do in my job now, I am a financial analyst too for a loan company. So what I do is I oversee 230 plus branches and we have like $1 billion in assets. So I oversee that. So my goal is to, while we're setting up those budgets, you know, we're putting those numbers together, we're running the forecast, we got to make sure that we're actually meeting those numbers, right? And if we're not meeting those budgets and those numbers, then we got to do a deeper dive into what's really going on. So let's give an example. Like, we may have a budget for the Louisiana market, right? If the Louisiana market is short $5 million to $10 million, then there's something that's going on. So to give a good overview, in November or December, we're going to expect lower numbers because we're going to have a lot of charge-offs due to COVID-19. A lot of people are not going to be able to pay their loans back, even with a plan that's being reworked. But it's just kind of the nature of the business. You're going to understand exactly the flow in finance.
Yeah. I always like to say that accountants and bookkeepers, their job is to give you the black and white, like do the numbers add up or do it or does it not. Our job is more about the analytical part. Why are these numbers not adding up? Will they add up in the future? What strategies can we implement to kind of fill those budget holes and that type of thing? So it's a little bit different. So our minds just work a little bit different when it comes to analyzing the money.
Right, right. And man, just to chime in a little bit more with that. So I've been on a new wave now, right? So my new wave is more towards, I've been working with a lot of small businesses, you know, basically Black entrepreneurs, and really educating them on, you know, the finance aspect of a business. And so I've been working with a lot of restaurant owners and kind of getting a deeper dive of the restaurant game. So, I mean, man, I'm doing the analyzing from the inside to the outside, you know, it's more than just the numbers. Like, you know, when you're looking from a financial standpoint, you know, one of the biggest factors is labor. Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to make sure, okay, if I'm going to project these, you know, these numbers, this revenue, I want to make sure that, you know, whether I'm projecting this expense, I want to make sure I have the revenue to cover it plus, you know, more. So you got to be, you know, one thing I tell business owners, you have to be honest with yourself, right? You have to know your numbers. That's the biggest thing about business.
That is so important. Yes. Tell them, yes. They have to know their numbers.
Yeah, you have to know your numbers. And I think with numbers and understanding the financial aspect, some people are scared of that approach. You know, they're more, okay, we're just going to run the business and I'm going to do what I love to do, right? It's really good to do what you love to do. If you love to be if you're a restaurant owner, or you have a clothing store or any type of business, you know, that's really good. You have a passion for it. Because I believe when there's a passion, there's a reason. And when there's a reason, you know, you're going to always push for success. But you also got to know the business aspect of it. You got to know where your numbers are.
When you find it, because I, you know, you sound like you're a consultant and I've done that for a long time now. Did you find that when you're getting into the numbers of some of these businesses, though they don't know the numbers, you're amazed at how they're still functioning, because some of the numbers are just way off and just so mismanaged. I'm like, how are your doors still open? And your numbers are just out of whack.
Well, I think with that, a lot of people know how to push products, right? Mm-hmm. If you know how to push a product and you have a good quality product, then that can make up for the numbers aspect, because you know that people are going to come and you're going to have the quantity to meet that number. But the thing with that situation, you don't really know the deeper dive of the finances. So it could be you're pushing products, but you can look at it more as I can push products and even make a better business choice, even developing more products, you know, and getting into a deeper dive of, okay, hey, what if product A is not pushing like product B or C? Well, I need to focus on what are the weaknesses for product B and C, you know, just really having a deep analysis of what everything that's going on. But I've met several business owners that, you know, they're still in business, but it's just because they have a good product. But they are willing and they're eager to learn, because they know at the end of the day, they have to know those numbers. They got to know exactly, is my business going in a good direction?
Yeah. And when you get into the numbers, again, kind of like, do you find that because they didn't know the numbers, kind of like your example, they have two products, product A isn't selling, but product B isn't, but they're wasting resources still producing product A, and they didn't know that they could have just put all their money into product B and made a better P&L, because they're just pushing their better product, and they really shouldn't be making the other product anymore.
Right, and so I'll give you a really good example, right? So I work with a restaurant, and this particular restaurant has a variety of products, right? So what I did is I sat down with the business owner, and I was talking about, I build a lot of charts, right? I build a lot of reports. And that's what a lot of people understand, like working in finance, you build reports all
day. A lot of finance, forecast reports, budgeting reports, all that.
Right. A lot of variance analysis, right? Yeah. You try to put the numbers against each other, right? So I sat down with them, and my goal was to establish, you know, what's working and what's not working, right? So we were able to understand exactly the products that we're pushing, because if we're going to have a lot of products that's not pushing and we're still getting those resources, at the end of the day, you're not only losing the money that you're expecting to get in, but you're losing the money from your expenses, your inventory. You get what I'm saying? So you have to be very mindful of the approach you take in business, for us with, you know, with products, and understanding, you know, what's the meaning behind it. Because you don't want to keep a product on hand that's not going to sell, because eventually that product's going to go bad. And that's like with any business. If the product is not selling, you know, 9 out of 10, you got to sell at a discounted rate just to try to get some of your profit back.
Uh-huh. And the worst thing you can do in a business is that forced sell. It's kind of like stocks. You would rather sell when you want at a profit than sell when you have to at a fire sale.
Yeah, and see, when you have a fire sale, the biggest goal with a fire sale, you're just trying to break even at that point, because mm-hmm. there's no profit involved. You're just trying to get a break even margin. And now that's another big factor when I'm working and I'm consulting with business owners. I always talk about break even, because if you're not breaking even, then you're giving your product away. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just the meaning behind it. You know, you got to know exactly what your number is. So if I see
you're hitting a point right there that I don't think talks about a lot. I didn't expect the conversation to turn into a financial thing, but I'm going to let it flow like this. Okay. Do you find, and I found this sometimes, business owners have mispriced, and whether they're either charging too much compared to their competitors or they're charging too little compared to their competitors, or even the worst point based on what you're saying, they're not even charging what it needs for them to produce the product. They're just throwing a number out that sounds good, but it really doesn't fall in line where they need to make their profit and, you know, revenues. Have you found that?
Right. So I'm going to touch on that right now. So let's give you, I'll give you a good scenario, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, what they tend to do is they come up with these numbers, right? So when you're coming up with prices for your products, are you doing, a SWOT analysis, right?
Yes.
You got to do a SWOT analysis, you got to do a competitor analysis. So you got to know who your competitors are. You should know more about your competitors than they should know about you.
Say that again for them, AJ. Like, I think people don't get that.
Like, I should be able to know my competitors from the back of my head. I know what they like. I know what they don't like. And I could build my strategies based on that if I wanted to. But a lot of people, when they make their prices, they look at it, okay, well, I pay this for this product. So if I make this product, I can sell it for this. Well, that's not the case because, you know, if you're in an area that is not a higher economical area, mm-hmm. then you're not, you shouldn't base your products at a higher price when you live in a poverty area. You know, that's the thing. Like, yeah, people are going to buy what they want, but you also got to have some realistic, you know, numbers behind that product.
Does that also go into knowing your clientele?
Yeah, knowing your clientele, but in different industries it's different because if you got a good product, then your clientele is going to, you know, it'll vary.
Mm-hmm.
But also, one thing what I tell people, when you're creating a product to sell, right, especially if you have a building or you have overhead, right, with that product, you want to make sure that you have every single thing for its overhead, all that can be covered down even to the smallest item. So, for example, let's just say if I have a restaurant and I'm selling a product, right, I may sell a seafood platter for $24, right? But it only cost me, you know, $4 or $5 to make that platter. Well, I know with the overhead, you know, as far as the operating expenses, it may push that expense up to from $5 to $10. Well, I know out of that 10 to 24, then that's my profit. And that's the thing, like what I tell people, you got to make sure your prices make sense. You got to make sure everything adds up because you're not only just paying, you know, your expenses, not only just what you pay for the food, but it's your overhead, especially if you have a business, a building. You know, so when I tell the restaurant that I consult for, when we make prices, we're going to base it off the market. And also what we're going to do is we're going to base it off profit margins. And that's the biggest thing, profit margin. Like, how much can I make?
A good point. Like, do you not, and people don't realize, let's say, for instance, what you were talking about for the restaurant industry, when you and I both know from analysis, restaurant industry, those profit margins are thin.
Right.
Like, they are extremely thin. Like, you know, it could mean the difference. And I'm talking about give or take a percentage can mean the difference between end of the year in black or in red. Retail's kind of the same way. And when you don't know your profit margins, if you're just kind of flopping around and all that and don't even, I've even had instances where people don't truly understand their income statements, their balance sheet, and their cash flow statements. Like, they don't even know how they're generating their money. And for most people, like, for instance, in a bigger analysis, like for a publicly traded company, you tend to generate your money two ways. Either you generate it through the sales of your products, or some of them are generating it through debt issues. And what I find in a smaller business is they don't know how they're generating their money. They know they're selling a product, but they couldn't tell me what's generating it. Is it the online sales? Is it the in-store sales? Like, and again, that plays into being able to run a profitable business and also understanding your consumer.
Right, right. And I agree with that 100%, man. So this is the thing, right? So if you have a clothing company or you're selling online, you have a, you know, you're selling in a store or, you know, you're selling from your home, your home-based business.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know exactly where that income come from. Which channel does that income come from? Because if you don't know exactly what those channels, then you don't know how to get better. So mm-hmm. if I know that internet sales are extremely high, then I know I need to continue to push internet sales. But at the end of the day, I need to also understand exactly how can I push out the building, you know, and even if, you know, having a building, you know, having an actual building for your business, if it doesn't work out, then you rethink the strategy for your business. And it will save a lot of money if you just start, you know, continue to push internet sales, even if you did it out of home-based business. You know, you got to see what works for you, but also you got to be able to identify, you know, where is this revenue coming from, you know, and how to set up your entire system of your business. So I think the biggest issue for certain companies, they don't have a system in place. A system is very important. So I can share with you, when I used to work with IBM, man, I can tell you one thing. One thing I learned about IBM is I understand exactly why they've been in business for that long period of time. You know, they was able to identify what were their products, what were their marks and you know, in the business, and also how to adapt to change.
Mm-hmm.
And I just watched their business process, you know, even with the SAP software system, you know, that's like a business software that can really run everything from the front to the back. But just watching the way they do business, it really opened my eyes to, okay, man, a business process is everything. It helps you develop your company. It keeps your company going.
So I want to keep, we're going to keep going in that aspect, but I wanted to tell a little bit more about you. Tell the people, how did you get into finance? What led you there? Because it sounds like I can relate to your passion. So I want to at least give them a little bit, tidbit about you. How did you, you know, get the MBA and all that? What brought you to this arena of, you know, of the financial industry?
So when I first started college, well, I've always been a person that loved numbers, right? But mm-hmm. when I first started college, I actually graduated with a degree in sociology with criminal justice and a minor in business.
Mm-hmm.
So I was actually a business major, but due to the fact the university that I was attending, they did not have any December graduation. So I was like, I'm not going to wait to graduate. I was maybe a year or two older than my classmates, my colleagues. So I was like, well, I'm going to go to sociology, criminal justice route. And then eventually I'll go back to school to get an MBA. So when I first finished college, what I work with in the sociology field, so more social work. And I mentor a lot of young men. So I was mentoring on how to be successful, how to stay out of trouble. I'm helping them out in, you know, with education. And I had a passion for that, and I still do, and I do it on the side. But eventually I went back to school. And when I went back to school, I attended Southern University in Baton Rouge, and I went for finance. Now, while I was going there for finance, I saw there was an opportunity for me to get another concentration. And so I did finance and supply chain management. So, like I said, man, my passion for numbers was always there. I've always been really big into business, learning more, understanding exactly how the business works. But I'm going to tell you this. This was the biggest push for me to go back to school for business. When I was working for a company when I was younger, man, one of the guys who I was working for was beating us out of a lot of money. And I've always told myself, like, I understand, you know, the value of working and how much you should be paid. And I'm not counting anyone's pockets, but I know that, you know, the hours we were working, we should have made more money, right? So I took it upon myself. I said, you know what? I'm going to go to school and I'm going to learn business. And once I learn business, I'm going to learn how to work from the inside to the outside. And that's what I went to school and I learned. So I think, man, my passion for finance is you know, I love finance. I love counting numbers. I can sit in front of a computer all day and build charts. You know, I can build financial models all day because I'm not only, you know, building, but I'm teaching someone how to understand finance well, but I'm giving them a story. It's a meaning behind your numbers. And I can show you exactly, you know, how to improve and make that change in your company. So I think that was really one of the main factors of me going to finance.
And I want to know, because it was similar to me in that way, but also, did you want to get into finance to kind of do what you were doing? What you're doing now is consulting with small black businesses, but because you didn't see a lot of us in that field, like there was none of us there learning to teach other of us how, you know, business should go, how the numbers should go and all that.
Right. Now, I would say I have a frat brother and he helps out. Like if I have any questions, he's right there, you know, and I can definitely tell he's a really good resource. Mm-hmm. Well, really good resource. So I would say he's been good for me. But in corporate America, one thing I learned, especially for the company I work for, honest and true, I'm the only black on the finance team.
Mm-hmm. I can relate.
One thing about that, I'm not intimidated. Nothing makes me feel beneath them because at the end of the day, my goal is to bring it to the table and I'm going to bring my knowledge, my business knowledge to the table. And so, you know, it's a challenge when you don't work in a diverse culture.
Mm-hmm.
The culture is very different, but at the end of the day, I have something to bring to the table.
Okay. So tell me, let's go into your own entrepreneurial ventures. Like tell the listeners the entrepreneurial ventures that you've taken or currently have.
So the job that I was saying that the guy who beat us out of money, that was the janitorial industry. So currently I am a janitorial owner. I have a business in Louisiana. So I service commercial cleaning, floors, carpet, anything you name, windows. Now, I got away from residential cleaning,
mm-hmm.
But I do it so often, but that's something that I do right now for janitorial work. What'd you say?
I want to dive into that deeper in a second, but go ahead.
Also, I actually have a property that I'm going to renovate. So I have a property that I'm going to get into, and I'm not going to say all the work myself, but I'm going to do a good 65 to 70% of work myself.
Wait a minute. You can renovate a house? You got to teach me some skills, bro.
Yeah. Like, growing up in Louisiana, man, my grandfather taught us everything. And I mean, you know, one thing I tell people, you know, it sounds crazy, but, you know, I learned how to work outside the house before I worked inside the house.
I heard that.
And, you know, so we used to help with, you know, my grandfather, when they built, added onto their home, or when they did plumbing. And my father, he's an electrician. So I learned a lot about how to wire a house. So, you know, that, and my uncle, he was in a concrete business. So he'll pull the concrete down and lay the foundation.
I'm definitely going to connect with you. I'm looking into getting my first rental before the year's out. So, and I was thinking, I was like, I could probably save money if I could do some of the work myself, but I'm not an electrician. Yeah. I'm not a plumber, but I'm not opposed to learning it. So we'll definitely connect on that. But
you know, it's funny though, man, with that whole project. So now, you know, you ever heard of PMP? That's a certification project management.
Yeah.
So I was looking at every project that I do, I'm going to use that as hours counted for that.
That is smart. That is very smart. I hadn't thought about it. That's a good way to finesse the game. Like, I mean, I'm telling you, our people always good at finessing the game. And that's an honest, because a general contractor on a real estate project is nothing but a project manager.
Right, that's all he is.
That's all he is a project manager. But right. In reference to your janitorial business, I always say this, and shout out a friend of mine on Twitter I've known from years now, shout out to Todd Millionaire. Well, you follow him too.
Yeah, we Todd, always man. Right. Todd the genius, bro.
Todd the genius, bro. The funny thing about that, me and Todd have always talked about how black entrepreneurs sometimes miss the service industry. And by that, we always say that people, when they think about entrepreneurs, it always has to be sexy. It always has to be glamour. It always has to be tech and everything that's trendy. But we still need those service industries. And janitorial work, there's a lot of money in janitorial work. People do not realize that small janitorial companies sometimes have billings of $2-3 million.
Right.
Not saying that's necessarily their profit, but that's their billing. That is a high volume business. And I think it's so dope that you, as a black man, and it makes sense based off what you said about your grandfather and you willing to do your own real estate renovations, that you're not afraid to get your own hands dirty. No money is too good for you.
Man, one thing, I laugh all the time, bro, because I tell people this. I said, I'll wear a suit in the day and I'll wear joggers in the evening. That's just how I am, man. Like, one thing about me, like, I treat people how I want to be treated. So, and I'm going to dive into the janitorial thing, but one thing I live by, this is what I live by every single day. Treat people how you want to be treated. Even if they treat you bad, you treat them good. You know, and you do that, God going to bless you tremendously. And that's how I am. And another thing I always live by is, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And that's just how I live my everyday life, man. Like, those statements, you know. And a lot of people, it was funny because, like, one of my friends, when I first got into janitorial work, you know, it was like, oh, man, you clean toilets? You do this, you do that? You know, I'm going to tell you this. Cleaning a toilet can make you a lot of money.
Speak about it.
Especially if you own the company.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I'm not afraid to work in janitorial. You know, a lot of people, they too private. But one thing about me, man, I let pride go a long time ago. And when you let pride go, that's when you can really, you know, be who you want to be and not do it for others. You know, so when I do it, when I have a job for us cleaning a building, then I'd be just as happy as outdoors, you know. And most people who I speak with, I come across with, they don't even know I'm in the finance industry. They don't know I have an MBA because I never present myself as that person. You know, I'm always a humble person. And, you know, to me, it's not all about, you know, the achievements all the time. You know, we equal. So I'm no better than you. So when I go to a building and clean a building, I'm going to do what I have to do and I'm going to have pride with cleaning it.
It's so funny that you say that, because there's this old saying that I always say. Because when I always think about, I always tell people that the one error about entrepreneurs sometimes in the black community is that they don't do enough collaboration, because everyone's always worried about who gets the glory, who gets to be out front, who gets the press and everything like that. And I honestly really don't care. I would rather have 20% of $1 million business than 20% of $100,000. But I say all that to say that there's this saying that says, when you think you've become too big for the little things, you've actually become too small to achieve the great things. And that makes me think about your willingness to put on your trousers and clean those toilets. Like, that's your thing. And, you know, renovate the house. Like, you're willing to do the necessary operational stuff to get the job done. It's not just because your name might be on the company and all that. You don't feel like you have to do that work anymore. And I'm sure eventually you'll get to the point where, not out of pride, but because your company has grown so big, you just can't afford to be the one cleaning the toilets anymore. Because you, you know, you got to run the operation. But the fact that now in the early stages, you're willing to grit and grind, that says a lot about your character and the success of your nature, man.
Right. One thing I always say, man, like, you know, my goal is to lead, right? If I'm a lead, I need to be there. If I'm going to build the company I want to build to be successful and to be handed down to my family, you know, to my loved ones, then I got to lay the foundation, right? And I have no problem with laying the foundation. And I think with every business that I open and throughout my life, I'm going to be the first person on the scene to lay the foundation. And as I lay the foundation, I'm building that business model, then that's when, you know, you will see me. You know, I may not be cleaning every single day. I may be overseeing projects or getting more projects, you know, but at some point you do have to lay the foundation. And, you know, eventually, you know, you move away from that, and then you learn to build more business with the company. Because there's a lot of money out there, man. I'm actually looking for maybe by the end of this year, I'm going to get my contractor's license.
Oh, nice.
So, man, one thing about me, man, like, I live life to the fullest. You know, I want to be able to achieve the things, and I don't achieve things for, you know, to make other people happy. I achieve it for my personal, for me. It makes me feel good, you know, that I'm going to get these things that I really want. Like, I want to get my contractor license. I'm going to get my CDL next year, because if I'm going to have a trucking company, then I need to make sure that I'm the one in the front. I lead, you know, so, you know, I'm going to get the contractor license, and, you know, I'm going to get a contractor license for janitorial. Then I'm going to get a contractor license for construction. You know, so, you know, it's a winning season. That's what I tell people. You know, can't be afraid to do things. Can't be afraid to offer those janitorial services, because, you know, you don't want to clean a toilet, or you don't want to, you know, sweep floors, mop floors. And there's a lot of money in that. It's a lot of money. And then you're developing different streams of income, you know. That's so. Great.
I definitely agree with you on that. The last thing I want to touch base on is tell them, because there was, I'm not sure if you've seen it, but it was a bait, I think it was about a week ago, about what was better, a 9-to-5 or being an entrepreneur. And I personally, I've always landed on the portion that, to me, the 9-to-5 is, like you were just talking about, one of those streams of income. It's not better or worse than the entrepreneur thing, but it's just an asset that I use to build other assets. How do you feel about it, and how do you work, run your, you know, day-to-day life of being an entrepreneur and having a 9-to-5?
Man, I'm going to tell you this. One thing, you know, I've looked at a lot of conversations around, you know, 9-to-5 and being an entrepreneur. I'll say this. I would rather a person do what they feel they want to do. Everybody's not going to be a business owner. That's just the truthfulness behind it. You know, everybody don't want to be a business owner. You know, some people just want to be, you know, work 9-to-5. And if that's what you want to do, then that's what you do. You know, and even if you want to just do something smaller inside, keep that 9-to-5 and you do something smaller inside. My motto is this. This is what my mom told me. You don't leave that 9-to-5 and you're trying to be an entrepreneur. You don't leave that 9-to-5 until you pays you double or triple what you make. That's when you want to leave that 9-to-5 and you're trying to be a full-time entrepreneur. But, you know, a lot of people, they get upset with people that work 9-to-5. But I know a lot of people have nice corporate jobs, really nice, like pays them well, you know, and it just depends on the person. But to me, I don't have no problem with it. You could be a 9-to-5. You could be an entrepreneur. I'm just a hustler. So that's all that matters to me. I'm just a hustler. I will hustle in the industry. If I don't know it, I'm a learner. That's just how I am. You know, so it's just whatever your preference is.
Okay. And I definitely agree with you. I definitely agree with you on that. I think we've gotten to the mentality is that ownership is everything, which it is. We should own more. Like, the Black community doesn't own enough. Like, I read this thing that said 50 years ago, we owned 1% of the, no, half of a percent of the wealth in the nation, and 50 years later, we're only up to 1%. We've only doubled, and considering that we're at 13% of the population, that's not enough. But I think that we got to get out of this arena where we're demonizing 9-to-5 over entrepreneurship, or when it should be something in conjunction. We should have as many outlets as possible. Would you agree?
Yes, I definitely agree. Now, with that said, like, even like you have a 9-to-5, you know, get you a side hustle. Mm-hmm. Get something that you like to do, and you know, it brings you another set of income. You know, especially when there's passion, when you're doing something, you're going to always love to do it. And so, you know, you might as well get paid for it. So I think, you know, we need to increase that percentage, because one thing about Black people, man, Black people are very, very smart. Very, very smart. And I feel like, you know, once we come together and really put everything together, like the plans and all that, we can be very dangerous to society in a good way. You know, we created so many different products. You know, we're very dominant in industries, and, you know, we're intelligent people. So I would definitely love to see that percentage increase.
I definitely agree. It's so much we talked on this episode, but I don't want to keep you too long. We're definitely going to have you on again, because I feel like there's so much more that you and I combined being in a similar industry can tell them. So I'm definitely going to reschedule for us to get on some more. But based off what you've given them already, I want them definitely to be able to find you. So give them all your social media handles. Let them know. We got some listeners in Louisiana. I checked the analytics, so put the business plug, put the website out on there. And also let them know your consulting services and all that, because we're definitely about promoting fellow Black businesses.
All right. So my Twitter name, I changed it to Corporate Killer because it's a meaning behind that. And then the next time you bring me on the show, man, I could really share some real experiences on my job. And I could really, you know, share like what's really motivating me to go to be a full-time entrepreneur.
Oh, definitely. They definitely need to hear that. We're about pouring into people. So if you got more to pour in, we're going to let you come on as much as you want.
Right, man. It's like my biggest thing. I've had a lot of failures in life. So I think once I share my story and how I was able to overcome everything that was thrown to me. And I mean, I have like a lot of things I failed, a lot of things I've been through. So I feel like sharing my experiences will help someone else that's coming up and, you know, wants to know exactly which direction to go. And I'm an open book, and I love to help people, and I love to see people be successful. So definitely the next time I come on, I'm going to have like more information. I'm probably going to give out some business templates for finance, some budgets. You know, I give that away just to help people grow.
Are you giving them free goodies? You setting the standards around here. Ain't no guests giving no free goodies now. Now they're going to be looking for you.
Right. So, you know, I want to give so last year I was supposed to build a financial analyst program, which mm-hmm. I have finished it, and I'm going to test it out. Mm-hmm. And this is going to help out a lot of people. But one thing I'm going to do is I definitely offer consulting services for is like understanding exactly how to work that budget template, you know, because it's a little bit behind the scenes that, you know, they need to know. So definitely I'm going to, you know, kind of explain that and how it would help their company grow and how to understand the numbers.
Give them your LinkedIn and all that so they can find you if they need to.
Okay, so my LinkedIn is Adron Frazier. I know a lot of people know how to say that, but it's Adron and last name Frazier with a Z. You can definitely connect with me on LinkedIn. I love to connect with people and help them out as much as possible, even if it was jobs or anything. You know, they need help with accounting questions, finance questions. Like I said, my Twitter is Corporate Killer. We're going to go in greater detail about that next time.
All right. So, everyone, we appreciate AJ coming on this episode. He definitely gave you guys a lot of tidbits, a lot of insight, a lot of good knowledge. We're going to have him on again because I feel like he got so much more he wanted to say. So that's dope. He's also going to get you guys a template and all that, which is even better because I know small businesses need that. So this has been episode 10 of The Culture's Money. I will talk to you guys soon.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitose, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.